Welcome to the podcast, Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, your host, and our focus is on mastering communication as an essential leadership skill so that you can command the room, connect with the audience, and close the deal in any context. After over 200 episodes, we are a top 1% podcast globally, thanks to you. So if you love listening to these conversations as much as I love having them, please take 30 seconds to leave us a 5-star rating and review, or just go to the website ratethispodcast.com/influence and follow their super simple instructions. Now, on with the show. My guest this week is Misty Davis. Misty is the Chief Marketing Officer of Circana. She joined Circana after 16 years at Google, where she held various global leadership roles. And while this is currently Misty's first time as Chief Marketing Officer, she's already conquered challenges that a lot of CMOs don't face in their entire career, including a merger and an entire corporate rebrand. Oh my goodness, Misty, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. Laura. Pleasure to be here.
What's a fun fact about you?
I was a competitive dancer since the age of about 2.
Fun.
So, yep. Did you know that? Probably not.
I did not. No, I didn't. And what kind of dancing did you compete in?
I did tap, which was my favorite. And I'm actually still teaching a tap class to elementary school girls.
Fun.
Ballet, hip hop. And the one that most people don't know about me is that I took Hawaiian. So take me on a trip to Hawaii and I will teach you the hula.
That sounds like so much fun. And I will totally take you up on that Hawaii trip. That sounds awesome.
You just got a trip to Hawaii out of this podcast. I love it.
I did. Who knew? See, it is worth these networking conversations.
It's influence. There we go.
Awesome. And like, who would have put hula and hip hop
in the same segment,
in the same conversation of things that you compete in? That's awesome. I will not ask you for a demo on the show, but after we turn the recording button off, we may have a separate conversation. Nevertheless, tell us a little bit more about Circana. What is your 30-second elevator pitch?
Circana is a data analytics and insights firm. We measure over $4 trillion of consumer spending, which helps give our clients the complete understanding of the complexities of consumer buying behavior. So think about how a brand can make better decisions on what products to develop, how they go to market. The retailers we partner with can make better decisions about what products to stock on shelf, what promotions to offer, et cetera. So I love Circana. We are a newer company from the merger of two iconic heritage companies. So super excited.
Oh my goodness. And in doing all that, what is the most important leadership communication lesson you had to learn, and how did you learn it?
That actually comes from my pre-Circana days. I would say the power of authenticity. So being an authentic communicator is incredibly important. And I tell you that because in presenting to hundreds of people on stage earlier on in my career, I used to be very scripted. I relied on my paper because I felt that it would help me make sure that I covered every point and I didn't miss anything, until an inflection point when looking at my paper and trying to balance the eye contact with the audience, I lost my place in the script.
Oops.
And I completely froze.
Which is everybody's worst nightmare.
Everyone's worst nightmare. Yep. You could feel the awkwardness in the audience because they knew I had lost my place.
Sure.
And so fast forward, I got through the presentation. Was it my best? Absolutely not. Did I miss a ton of points? And was I frazzled for the remainder? I was. So why I continue to try to communicate with authenticity and lead with authenticity, but from a communication perspective, what I love to do now is come up with acronyms when I am presenting and communicating. Most recently, I actually just did a town hall where I was thinking through the acronym of CARE: culture, accountability, resilience, executional excellence. I had CARE in my head. And when I was moving on to the next topic, I said, now we're going to talk a little bit about culture. And I talked and spoke from the heart, a real authentic narrative. I knew who I had practiced. I knew what I wanted to say about the culture, but all I had in my head was C of CARE. Then I moved A to accountability. So it's allowed me to move away from the script and into that more authentic communicator style.
There's about 17 partial lessons in there that all create a lesson that's so much greater than the whole being greater than the sum of the parts. That's what I'm trying to come up with here.
Love that.
The use of mnemonic acronyms, I think, is really creative as a way to get off script, because you are the expert. You do know this stuff. You've spent how many days, weeks, months putting this deck together, preparing for this presentation? You know it in your sleep, but there's that fear of what if. And so we have a script as a crutch. that so many people really rely on, even though they don't need it. But the idea of, okay, how to get off book, so to speak, the idea of creating those little mnemonics, those little memory joggers, and acronyms are great ways to do it, just to be able to work through. So I love that tip. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Of course.
Now, what about your DISC profile or Myers-Briggs, some personality test that you've taken? Was there one that stands out in particular that really hit home and influenced the way that you communicate with others on your team or organization after you understood something better about yourself?
I've taken a lot of those in my career.
Sure.
And I think what it does is it really empowers you to have more self-awareness because you not only learn your own profile, but you also learn about others. Mm-hmm. One of the things I've loved about Myers-Briggs, there's a colors exercise that was really big at Google. I am an ENFP. Mm-hmm. For any of my other listeners that are ENFPs, we've got big, bold, and sometimes overwhelming personalities. Mm. And when you take this test, you learn about some of these qualities that are, yes, very exciting, very powerful, very vibrant. But you also have to learn how to work with folks who are not ENFPs.
Sure.
I actually married an INTJ. So they do say opposites attract.
So for those out there who have not taken the Myers-Briggs, give us like a 5-word description of an ENFP versus an INTJ being polar opposite.
An ENFP loves emotion, leads with emotion and excitement. And an INTJ is more introverted. So it's extroverted, introverted in the E's and the I's. Wants to process things, wants to be a little bit more intentional with how they're communicating versus an ENFP sometimes says what's top of their mind. They're excited and they can't wait to tell you versus an INTJ is a bit more intentional. And so that's really been interesting from both a professional of me learning to work with folks who are not an ENFP profile. Mm. How will they take delivering feedback? How will they take this tough conversation? How will they take being excited? Are they going to express excitement the way I will? Probably not, but that's okay. They are still excited.
So what's a tactic that you've taken on when you as ENFP need to talk to your INTJ who's in your IT department or who's in your accounting department or who's in your wherever else? How do you shift your approach to giving them feedback or making requests or whatever you need from them?
I don't expect them to respond the way I necessarily am responding. And listen, we have different profiles, even on my direct reports, my leadership team, within marketing, within training, et cetera. It is a very humble reminder that we are all different in the way that we process information, we communicate information, and we express our excitement, our sadness, our concerns, et cetera. So just having that extra attentive awareness that we are all unique in the way that we communicate is incredibly helpful. The colors exercise is an interesting one. I can't remember what the name of the colors, we called it the colors exercise, but my color was yellow, which was very similar qualities to that ENFP. It's sunburst, it's vibrant, it's over the top, it's emotional. Secondarily with red, which is the more assertive, directive, et cetera. And you would take the colors exercise on a frequent basis. And it was interesting because as I would grow in seniority or change in leadership responsibilities, my red became more prominent. I was changing in myself as a leader. And some of these DISC profiles, these tests can help you see how you're adapting new characteristics of your communication strategy, your leadership strategy, to actually change your profile as you grow in your career.
It sounds like having that understanding of different profiles has really helped you manage expectations for how you believe others will react and being able to approach them and not misinterpret or not have unreasonable expectations for what their reaction would be. I think we often get frustrated when someone doesn't respond the way we want them to respond, but this has helped you interpret that more effectively. Would that be fair?
Totally fair. And just being a more compassionate and empathetic leader, just understanding that side of everyone.
Yes.
Has been important. And for my husband as well.
All of these things are every bit as applicable in the personal realm as in the professional. So kudos to you for throwing in that little public service announcement and reminder to everybody that we tend to draw the line between those two realms. There's no such line to be drawn.
Yep.
But tell me about now an opportunity that you missed because you held back. Why'd you hold back? And if you could have a do-over, what would you do differently?
You're transporting me to the beaches of Bondi Beach in Australia.
Fun.
I got an amazing opportunity to go abroad and live in APAC during my time at Google. And I got to live in Australia, in Japan, in Malaysia, and in Singapore. And I did a rotation. And at the end of my rotation, they offered me an opportunity to stay. I was younger. I was single. I had nothing holding me back. But the comfort of going home, of going back to the biggest market and the fast track, it drew me back home. I didn't take the risk. I missed just being free at that moment in time in my life. Mm. And so I often think about, would I have stayed on the beaches of Australia for a year or 2 years or 5 years? I do sometimes just think, because what I was drawn to was the US being, again, the HQ, the biggest market, et cetera. But the reality was APAC was the rocket ship. Mm. They were the emerging market who was testing new things, and there was nowhere to go but hockey stick up and to the right. And so I would watch some of the peers and the folks that I met just having smashing success after I left in those years to come. And I always thought, what if I had stayed?
Yes, the known versus the unknown. Yes, being one of the explorers versus part of the already winning team as opposed to the team that's going to win next.
That's a beautiful way. Yeah, that's a really great way to say it.
Oh, I love it. So then tell me about a time when you did decide to take a big risk. What was at stake and how did you communicate your decision to key stakeholders?
So, you know, you should take a risk all the time. I am less of a big, bold risk taker, but the biggest one I took was actually leaving Google. Mm. And it's actually funny you asked those two questions, because the comfort and the easier answer would have been to stay at Google.
Sure.
I loved it. A lot of people thought I was going to retire at Google. They couldn't imagine me anywhere else but Google, because I loved what I did. I loved my job and I still had great opportunity in front of me. But I knew that I had a career growth plan that I've been working on. I had a plan to keep building the skill sets and leadership qualities to someday be a chief marketing officer. And that opportunity came. So it was a risk, because I was leaving a phenomenal place that still to this day holds so near and dear to my heart. But I was going to the uncharted territory, the unknown, a first-time CMO at a new company. Little did I know we would then be embarking on two of the biggest pieces of a merger and a rebrand. So it was a risk in leaving the nest, you could say, but I have not looked back. What we are doing, what I want to do, and the vision of where I want to bring Circana is amazing. So it has helped make that risk that seemed so big 2.5 years ago not seem as big anymore.
And who did you need to communicate that decision to when you did decide to make the leap?
Oh man, I had teams and people that had worked on my team for over a decade that we had worked together, and telling folks that I was embarking on a new adventure, that was hard. It was hard because we'd been together for so long, but I have to tell you, they could see my excitement and they knew this was a goal. We talk about it. We all wanted to discuss where we want to be in 5 years from now, 10 years from now, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I hope that I was an inspiration to many who saw me follow my dream and take that risk of leaving the comfort. So yeah, talking to the team that I had helped build and that we had worked through so many ups and downs for so many years was challenging, but seeing their excitement for me helped make it easier.
Love it. You know you've got a good team when they're happy for you, even though they're sad for themselves that you're leaving.
Yes.
That's a really important marker, yeah. I think, of the culture that you've built within the organization.
Thank you.
Now, the challenge that produced for you, I'm sorry, was multifold. Let's give our listeners a challenge. It's time for the listener 24-hour influence challenge of the day. So what is one step, Misty, that you would like to challenge our listeners to take that they can complete within 24 hours to have more influence?
I'm going to say something that is both to have more influence, but also to just give you some more confidence that all it takes is one call.
Okay.
I'm in a very interesting part of my unique journey where I've got this exciting new opportunity and this job, but I'm also at home, a mom of 3 kids under 7. Mm,
busy house.
So with being a career-driven working mom, there are sacrifices that we all have to take.
Of course.
And one of the things that I have not been able to do from a communication perspective as much as I used to, because it's work hard, parent hard right now, is communicate with loved ones, friends, and family from my past. I no longer live in the same city that I used to, where I built so many friendships.
Sure.
So I'm giving you all a challenge to pick up the phone to a loved one who you haven't talked to in a while and just cold call them.
Yeah.
And if they don't answer the first time, leave them a message. I know no one leaves voicemails anymore.
Crazy.
But just say, I was just calling to say hi. call someone you haven't talked to in a while, because I promise whoever you just thought of when I said that is somebody who, when you do call them and you connect, you're going to pick up like it was yesterday. And if your convo is 5 minutes or if it's 5 hours, you are going to influence them to also make another connection with someone they've lost touch with. And let me know who you call. Dr. Laura, I'm holding you accountable too.
Okay, I will do the same. A good friend of mine has always said, good friendships withstand long silences.
Beautiful. I love that. I'm going to steal that.
Steal it.
Thank you.
Steal it away. And I'll hold you accountable for using it as well. That's great. Now, tell me about a time when you went to bat for someone else. Who did you speak to on their behalf and why and how?
This was a few years ago. I had someone who I had worked with for years. I told you I'd worked with a lot of folks for decades. So hardworking, so well-loved. You know, when I think about it, that care analogy was part of the culture, always was held accountable for everything, resilient, but had trouble presenting and representing themselves to upper management. For some reason, phenomenal with clients, phenomenal with the team, but had trouble presenting themselves to upper management. And so when a leadership opportunity came, wasn't necessarily going to get the opportunity because hadn't presented themselves and didn't have that credibility at the senior stakeholder level. I knew the passion. I knew the potential. And I went to bat and I said, this is the person for the job. And if in 6 months it's not working, I will say, mea culpa, I really thought this was the one and we'll figure it out. We did a lot of coaching, lots of one-on-one conversations. That person's still in a senior leadership position today with a team of amazing people who would do anything for this leader. This leader has come into their own. And I love that I went to bat for that person, but that person also made it very easy because I believed in her. When I left Google, at my farewell, there wasn't talk of the sales quotas and numbers and things like that. Everyone talked about times that I had believed in them or had given them a chance or had gone to bat for them, not just this person, but others. And so it's a really good, humble reminder to go to bat for people, to fight for the people that you know and you believe in your heart are the future of your company or your industry, et cetera.
It's such an interesting thought as far as legacy distinction, whether it's at your retirement party or eventually at a eulogy or whatever. When people give testaments to you and the mark that you made, think about the difference between a bunch of people who get up and said, she was amazing, she did this. She was amazing, she did that. She was amazing, she did this other thing. Versus, she was amazing, she did this for me. And to have a bunch of people getting up saying, here's what she did for me. Here's what she did for me. What a distinction that is in recognizing the mark that you've made in other people's lives versus in something more in a revenue stream or a building or something along those lines. So I think that's really beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
And I definitely have tried my best to bring that to my Circana experience and continuing to fight for my people, advocate for them, go to bat when there's someone who isn't as well known, but I believe in them. So hopefully other leaders can do the same.
Yeah. And I think it's something that people tend to forget to do. There's so much pressure to produce. There's pressure to get your name on something to be associated with. And of course, you know, in our jobs, yes, we do need our KPIs. We do need our deliverables. We do need those things that we're responsible for. But in the big picture, why does it have to be what I've done versus what I've done for others as a binary choice? I think in the course of achieving those KPIs and building those brands and hitting those new revenue targets, I would think that the more we attempt to do things for others in the process would just make the road to those goals that much smoother and shorter.
And happier.
Yes.
Not necessarily going back to your challenge, but if we think about in our day-to-day world where we send so many emails as a form of communication and the way that we speak to influence is so driven by email right now, another thing that we all can be better at is our first inclination is to send an email to highlight things that aren't working and how we're going to improve them. And I don't think any of us take enough time to use email as a communication vehicle to celebrate amazingness in our people.
Yes.
So take that 1 to 2 minutes to just send a note to a leader or a peer to spotlight someone who did something great. A lot of the times, a lot of that stuff goes either unnoticed and or it's table stakes to just get that end KPI or goal. But to that person, a note to their boss's boss, who may be your peer, is a phenomenally motivating way to use speaking in email to influence even greater performance from that person. Yes. So let's not underestimate the power of going to bat for people, even in as simple as a one-liner to appear on someone who did something great.
Yes. And that's also the value. I think an email can be used simply to give someone acknowledgement, because to your earlier point about different personality types, some people like the kudos, some people don't want any attention drawn to themselves. But for those who are like, whatever you do, don't look at me in public, we can at the very least send a one line, two line email just to that person saying, I just want you to know, I noticed this.
Great.
I saw you do that. I want to acknowledge you for going the extra mile or doing this little thing and not requesting credit for it or not whatever else, but I know that was you and I appreciate it, or I appreciate you.
What an amazing spin. Yeah, not even necessarily needing to forward it on to someone else, just acknowledging them in the moment that they helped make this project better. I love that spin.
And nothing else there. I remember a million years ago, my aunt gave me some advice that whenever you received a card like that or something that made you feel good about yourself, to take the piece of paper and fold it up and stick it in the bottom of your sock drawer. She would call those sock drawer or bottom drawer events, so that little by little over time, you'd sort of stack up those little mementos of something when somebody made you feel good. And so when you're having those really, really lousy days, you could go dig into the back of that sock drawer and pull something out to just give yourself that boost of confidence.
Those kudos.
Yes. Yeah. And it's not an ego thing.
No, it's a confidence builder. It's a reassurance. We all have crazy pressure on us. A little boost of confidence is not a bad thing.
Right.
I love that.
So see, everybody open a new folder somewhere in your hard drive on the whatever subdomain folder it is and call it your sock drawer folder. And
yeah, your sock drawer. I have an email folder in my inbox called For a Rainy Day.
Okay.
And it's kind of similar moments. It's if, someone acknowledged or recognized something, and if I just need a little confidence boost, and you just go in there and you just read it.
Yeah. Awesome. That's beautiful.
I like the sock drawer moment.
Yeah. And if nothing else, you know what? Save it in your folder so that when you come up for a promotion later or when you're vying for an opportunity and you're looking for evidence that you've contributed something, especially if you're not someone who tends to really showcase more explicitly the stuff that you've done, you're not as self-promoting necessarily, at least you've got a handful of emails stored someplace that say, thanks for doing this. Great job on that. You're key for these kinds of things. So they're easy to find.
Projects, those moments. I love that.
Yep. Yep. Little emails to save. You can put a little red bow on it just for you. I love where this went. So hopefully people are taking a lot of great ideas for themselves to just, if nothing else, boost the confidence and remember and find ways to give that gift to others, because it's so easy.
Yeah. You are, and every one of us is an influencer to others.
Yes. Every day in every conversation. Absolutely. Misty, finish the sentence. I wish I was better at explaining what to whom?
I wish I was better at explaining bad news to hardworking people.
Mm.
I say that because, especially being in marketing, we work on complex marketing launch plans. And launch plans is probably the example that I'll use. When your team has given it their all and we've gotten a website ready for launch and we have pulled a really late night and we have 15 different activations all planned for 9 a.m. the next morning, and then something happens with the product, something is, delayed with the legal wording of something out of our control happens.
Yeah.
And the project doesn't see the light of day. Oof. In that moment.
Yes.
Or maybe even
never. Ouch.
Delivering hard news to hardworking people is a really interesting one that, from a communication perspective and speaking to influence, I want to balance that pride and that appreciation with going back to what we talked about earlier, making sure that they are processing, wow, I just pulled an ear all nighter and nothing came to the light of day.
Right.
That frustration. How do you balance all of those emotions as you are communicating to your team, and you're keeping them motivated for whatever delay and or different change in direction might be in front of them needing to be more work? So there's no perfect way to ever deliver hard news, but I think that hard news to really hardworking people who have given it their all is one that I'm constantly looking to try to make sure that I finesse, because I want to make sure that that pride and appreciation really comes through.
Yeah, exactly. And for all the hard work that went into whatever they were doing, where the plug just got pulled or whatever other demise it came to, that's really disheartening. Because you feel like you have nothing to show for all that you've done. Your value may not be recognized, what you've contributed. So those are the kinds of things I think that definitely need to get explicitly recognized. Finally, Misty, tell me about a time when you had to laugh at yourself.
I laugh at myself every single day. And for anyone listening to this who knows me, they will agree. Recently, I had, okay, this is for all the parents listening. I had a sick child home and I was on a Teams call for work and I was cranking through and we were working on a deck and I was in full blown Misty mode, which is like, watch out, tunnel vision. We are in production mode. And I saw out of the corner of my eye, my son testing the limits of, you know, new things. And in the same sentence where I said, all right, can you move that image right there? Why do you have a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle up your nose? Get it out. And that is absolute true story. And it happened not so long ago.
Did everybody just burst out laughing or freeze? Like,
and I said, I am so sorry. I have a sick child home today. I kind of live two lives right now. Work hard, harder. So it was in that moment where I, one, laughed. And they, like, everyone cracked up. I was cracking up. And you just have to laugh. We are all human. And it goes back to that authenticity.
Yes.
Like, yeah, I got a sick kid. And everyone who has a kid has had a sick kid at home. I love that one.
Yeah, I do too. And that's one that you can definitely hold over your son or daughter's head.
I wish that I had started a book years ago of all the things I never thought I'd say as an executive woman.
Yes.
Because of the hats I wear of raising three kids under seven as well. I missed that mark, but maybe this will be the opening chapter.
Those are the moments that humanize our conversations, I think. Those are the moments where you don't expect it. Before the whole world went virtual, I was already doing coaching calls then on Skype, and I didn't have the banner behind me, so you had a straight view back to my door to the hallway, and my son was probably about 2.5 or so, and the nanny had been giving him a bath in the other room, and he got out of the tub and managed to escape, and I apparently had not locked my door, so in all of his God-given glory, comes bursting into the room, hearing me through the wall, and decides he wanted to say hi as I'm Zooming with a client, and comes full head on straight to the camera. And I thought, oh my goodness, okay, no, let's put that away. Thank you very much.
But you humanized yourself. You became so authentic to listeners and everyone who was there with you. So
it's like mute camera button, listen, mute camera button.
I love my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle moment now.
Yes.
I'm embracing.
And it's funny because the person on the other end absolutely burst out laughing and said, well, that just humanized the conversation. And I thought, yes, let's call it that. I'll be right back.
We were so fixated on deadlines and font choices, et cetera. And it also just lightened the mood a little bit. So
yes, a good dopamine hit of a good belly laugh. You can't pay for those. You know, when they happen that spontaneously, that's terrific. Oh my goodness, Misty, I have loved every minute of this conversation. How can people learn more about you and Circana?
Definitely check out our website, circana.com. You can learn all about our industries, our solutions, our leadership team, and more. So I'm so humbled and thankful to get to meet you and talk to you, Dr. Laura. And I hope that all of you took something away. And you remember, we are all influencers. So
yes,
thank you.
We are. That's terrific. And we'll have all of your links for different social media platforms and whatnot in our show notes.
Follow me on LinkedIn, because on Fridays, I send a really awesome recap of everything consumers are doing.
Very cool.
So follow me on LinkedIn, Dr. Laura.
I got to do that. Yes, I want that Friday recap. Love it. And to everybody else, thank you, of course, for tuning in. As always, be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And once again, if you love the show, please leave us a 5-star rating on your platform of choice so we can help even more people to increase their confidence, presence, and influence. And finally, if you want to download my free guide to equipment recommendations for virtual influence, including my picks for microphones, lights, and more, go to speakingtoinfluence.com. I'm Dr. Laura Sekola, and you're listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite.
Thanks for listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite, the show for leaders who want to speak with impact. The hosts, producers, owners, and media distributors of the show make no guarantees that the strategies and information discussed will result in profit or other success and may result in losses. The opinions and statements of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the owners, staff, managers, broadcasters, or sponsors of the show. No medical or psychological therapy or personal or professional wellness or relationship advice is offered in the show. You are advised to seek counsel on matters related to your health, family, relationships, job, or other business and legal matters from licensed advisors in those areas prior to making any changes in business or lifestyle. No information provided may be suitable in your situation. As always, take responsibility for the decisions and actions you take, including the reactions they may make in your work, family, health, and life.